And now, it's time for Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on 103.9 LI News Radio.
Welcome, everybody. It must be Saturday afternoon at around 2 p.m. We're here for you every week. We talk about the workplace, job hunting, finding a great job, keeping your job, excelling on your job, being a more compelling and engaged employee. There's just about nothing we don't talk about as it relates to being successful in the workplace here on Radio Jobland. We've been doing it a very long time. I have just come back from vacation. I want to spend a minute and rant about my vacation a bit. We went to a place, a wonderful place in Ogunquit, Maine. This very rustic town, terrific, great restaurants and everything. But the problem was, everywhere I went, I had to walk. I don't like walking. I don't want to go on vacation and walk. If I want to go on vacation, I want people to walk to me. That would be the ideal thing. So I did too much walking, and I whined and complained a great deal. But I also ate the best lobster I've ever had. And the water was so crystal blue. It was 3-4 feet down, and you can still see the bottom of the ocean. Beautiful. Not like here at Jones Beach or something like that. So I recommend Maine, but go to a hotel where everything's enclosed. I also want to do a shout out to my mom, who's not doing very well. Mom, I hope you feel better. And I want to talk about today's show a little bit. This is one of my favorite topics. We're going to be talking about interviewing, but not just how to be successful on an interview. We've got an expert with us that's going to teach you how to be a good interviewer, how to ask the right questions, and most importantly, how to find out if the candidate you're interviewing is a cultural fit for your organization. And her name is Christina Pulido. She's been on Jobline several times. I believe this is her third voyage. She's the founding principal of Compass Workforce Solutions, LLC. Founded in 2009, Compass provides HR resources and expertise to small businesses in the New York metro area, New Jersey, and New York. Christine holds a master's degree in management from North Park University, a BS in business from University of Wisconsin, and a certification as a senior professional human resources, SPHR, and SHRM SCP, which perhaps you could tell me about. She has practiced human resources in a leadership role for more than 25 years in multiple industries and environments within the Fortune 250 venture capital and equity-backed companies, as well as privately held and family-owned businesses. She's great at everything as it relates to HR. So Christine, of course, trains people on how to do interviews, right?
Absolutely, Scott.
So we're going to be talking today about how to do it right and how to make sure we have the cultural fit. Before we start, we're going to throw it over to our intrepid Evan Roberts, who is our super intern. And Evan, if you would read a weekly commercial for us.
Yep. So today's commercial is for BizShout. BizShout is a global network to socially promote yourself or your business, which fits in between Facebook and LinkedIn. For their first service, they built a new creative resume and human capital database that can boost your professional brand and help you land your dream job. It's free to design, and you should check them out at bizshout.com, spelt with two Z's.
Okay, and it's increasingly popular organization. Evan, have you done anything yet with your creative resume?
Yes, I started it, and I spoke to the CEO, Charlie Lee, about it, actually, and he's a very big help, and honestly, I love the program. Mm-hmm. It's great, and it makes it easy, and it makes it fun to build a resume.
Mm. So you're going to send me a link one of these days and show me what it looks like?
Yep.
Okay, look forward to that. And we'll even talk, we'll have Charlie on the show. And we'll bring a laptop on the show and talk about where he's gone with this company. Great company, BizShout. We are supporting the company, Christine, because we think someday he could be a billionaire. So, and we're afraid that if he becomes a billionaire and we didn't promote him all we could, then we won't get our share. So,
right.
Charlie, shout out to you. So, Christine, how have you been?
I'm great.
So tell us about what your company does, and then we'll move into the interview.
Sure. So we provide services to small businesses and typically with companies that don't have internal HR expertise, but oftentimes we're also engaged to do a project. And selection and recruiting is one of those places where we can really bring our expertise to the forefront. And a lot of companies in Long Island and New York metro area maybe only have one HR person. Mm-hmm. And right now the job market is fairly tight. If you're recruiting and looking for people, you have to be highly responsive, and it can be hard to do that by yourself.
Mm, true. So you definitely need help, and that's what your firm does. And, you know, we talk so much about how to ace an interview, how to go on an interview and ace it. That's one of our favorite subjects. Evan, I don't know how much you've done it with me, but it's one of the favorite topics here on Jobline, because if you can ace an interview, that's a super skill. That's a superpower. And but I think what we don't talk enough about is how to conduct an interview, how to do it right, how to set the table, how to read the person, how to, you know, and this is the kind of thing we want to talk to you about. So first of all, just give me some do's and don'ts. You know, what do you think human resources people or hiring managers are not doing? And perhaps they're not even paying any attention to the cultural fit.
I think one of the biggest things that we see is people really don't prepare for an interview. Mm-hmm. So you really need a good 15 minutes in advance of the person's appointment to review the resume, review your questions. You know, obviously this person has been pre-screened, but to really hone in on where do you want to focus? What are the things that are exciting about their resume that caused you to bring them in and talk to them further so that you can focus in on those areas and dig a bit deeper? And it's also an opportunity for employers to have a nice way to showcase themselves mm-hmm. and to express in a meaningful way who they are, what are their values, what's their mission, what is the company about. And I think most hiring managers, not so much HR professionals, but more hiring managers go into interviews completely unprepared mm-hmm. and they just kind of shoot from the hip. And hope it goes well.
Well, let's talk about why that is. So they're usually very good at what they do, their job themselves. But as far as interviewing, they've had no training in this. Very rarely do they have training. And so they're hoofing it. They're winging it. They're going, yeah, I'll figure it out. And let me talk to the guy and I'll see and I'll know. But it's so hard to determine if someone is a cultural fit under those circumstances.
It is. And I think the other thing is, you know, things that we do every day, we get really, really good at. Mm. But if you're not interviewing people every day or on a regular basis, even if you had a strong skill set, maybe you haven't interviewed people for a year. So you're jumping right back in the saddle without a refresher or an update. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you're not going to come as prepared.
So the hiring manager, he's concerned, can this person make my job easier? Can this person do the job and make my job easier and make me move me forward in the company? Those are all lurking in the back of someone's mind when they're doing an interview. But I think the hiring managers focus more on the technical ability to do the job. They're not thinking about the fit. They're not even thinking about the culture. They may not even know what the culture is. They're not even up to that. They're just saying, can this person do the job? Maybe that's the problem. They need some training and they need to expand what they're asking questions about.
That's very true. So one of the areas that we've done training in that's gotten great response is setting up interviews and a structured selection process, not only to evaluate knowledge, skills, and abilities, but cultural fit and values. Mm-hmm. And how do you determine if the person that's sitting in front of you shares similar values and has the behavioral skills, so things like communication skills, sense of urgency, customer service, responsiveness, that the organization has or that department or that hiring manager has.
So the biggest question then becomes, what happens if you don't do this? So now we hire a person that we think is good, has all the right credentials, has the right education, has the right expertise, and in theory can do the job. But you never bothered to determine if that person is a right cultural fit. What happens then?
So that person's going to struggle, and there's several reasons. So culture is kind of, it's, you know, values is shared systems of beliefs, mm-hmm. but culture is a shared systems of behavior or a structure that everyone is behaving within and how decisions tend to be made and how work is done. So those parameters, if someone is bumping up against their typical habits versus the culture of the company, then they're not going to be successful. So I'll give you an example. Some companies are really all about face-to-face communication. Some companies, employees, you'll see even people sitting next to each other texting or emailing instead of having a face-to-face conversation. Mm-hmm. So understanding the communication channels in your organization and how you want people to communicate is really important, so that you're bringing someone in that is going to be able to communicate in that way. Mm. Because if I'm not communicating appropriately, I'm not going to get along with my coworkers. I'm probably going to be challenged to really meet my manager and understand where they're coming from and what the expectations are. And then I certainly am going to have a difficult time going outward with the communication to customers or clients or other shareholders in the organization. So that would just be just one aspect of understanding what is the culture.
Well, let's actually define what do we mean by a company's culture? Because people hear this word and they're not really sure what it means.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a great textbook definition, but it really tends to be a combination of values, so shared systems of belief, and then culture is shared expectations and shared norms. Mm-hmm. So kind of what we place of importance or unimportance, how we connect with others. Do we value independent work or more teamwork in our organization, and how are those things weighted? Is the customer always right, or is it an employee first culture? Mm. So those are the types of things that companies need to understand. So culture usually isn't really documented, but what you can ascertain within an organization to pull your culture together is, what are the behaviors that determine success? And one of the best practice ways to do this is to identify people who are successful in the role. And if given an opportunity, that hiring manager or that organization would actually clone them. Mm-hmm. Then you would want to take, a couple different roles, maybe some different functions. You've identified those people. And now we would take them through a structured interview, learning from that person, what do they believe is making them successful? Mm-hmm. But also asking the other people in the group, what makes other people successful in the organization? And then when you call information like this from multiple sources, you can compile a set of shared behaviors that allow people to be successful. And you can even kind of rank them on a list of importance, because you and I were just talking about, there is no ideal candidate. Mm-hmm. So you're always going to have to be flexible in one area. But there certainly are going to be certain areas where you're not going to want to sacrifice, where that is a critical area. So those types of things are outlined. So, the organization's tolerance for risk or for failure. So if it's a highly innovative organization and there's a lot of risk taking that needs to happen, or a lot of experimenting or pilots, if you bring someone in who's risk averse or maybe has isn't willing to be open, very concerned about personal failure or being vulnerable, that person is not going to be successful in that culture. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that you need to determine.
Candidates ask me quite often, is the culture one where they promote from within? That's a big question that they seem to want to know. So it's great when a company does have that culture where you're constantly seeing people getting promoted. I think that's very motivating and inspiring, and that's the kind of thing I would be looking for if I went to on a job interview, went to a company. If I'm a hiring manager, I certainly know what to ask to determine if somebody can do the job. Basically, you can give them a what if. You could say, what would you do if this happened? And you get three or four of those, and mm-hmm. you start accumulating some really good information about whether or not they can do the job. So I don't think that people have too much trouble with that, but I think they're not paying attention to whether or not a person's a fit. Now, I had a hiring manager tell me just recently that, this is a person that had a 25-year sales career, right? She says, this person can't be in front of people. That was her response. I said, well, what do you mean? She says, he doesn't listen enough. He talks too much. So I said, it's a job interview. Shouldn't he be talking? And so I'm pushing back because I don't really agree with her. This person had three jobs, about 8 years each, mm-hmm. all nothing but success. And she probably didn't hit it off with him and got off on the wrong foot. and boom, the candidate's dead now, dead to her. Okay, but so sometimes there's a fault on the part of the interviewer. They can send things off in the wrong direction too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there's a lot of innate interviewer biases. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the biggest ones is we tend to really easily identify, it's called affinity bias, and align with other people who we believe are like us. Mm-hmm. So shared life experiences, shared neighborhood, kids play the same sports, and we start aligning with that person. But that's not really a valid assessment of their ability to do the job or their ability to be successful in the culture. It just means in the moment, I'm comfortable with you. Mm-hmm. And that is where we see a lot of hiring managers make mistakes. But I'm also going to challenge you a little bit about mm-hmm. the technical questions. Mm-hmm. Because when you're asking people technical questions, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Mm-hmm. So we always train our hiring managers to ask a question. Tell me about a time where you had to do X. Tell me about a time where you had to resolve a conflict. What happened? How did you deal with it? And what, if anything, would you do differently? Mm-hmm. And so the answer to that question is now not a hypothetical question. I'm telling you a real life story about how I behaved in the work environment. And that gives a hiring manager a tremendous amount of context of how does this person resolve conflict? They're describing a real life event. And because we're asking them to describe something that did happen, it's a much more neutral, non-judgment-based question, because also the candidate wants to give what they believe is the right answer. So in the hypothetical reality, people will give hypothetical right answers, mm-hmm. which may or may not be what they actually have done in the past. So that's kind of framing things in the mindset of behavioral-based interviewing, again, going back to the theory that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And that's also going to be very indicative of the behaviors that that person is going to demonstrate in the work environment.
So there are many people out there, Christine, that go on a job interview and confronted with a question they have difficulty answering, they sometimes will tell a non-truth. They will lie on an interview. I've seen it happen. People have done it to me. I've been interviewing people my whole career. And occasionally people do lie. How do you know if you're getting the truth?
Well, you can usually start digging and asking details, because if something happened to me, I can give you great color commentary. How many people were involved? You know, what was the outcome? What was the resolution? You know, so if we're talking about the conflict scenario, you can say to them, well, what was your relationship with the person after that incident? How did you get along on a go forward basis? Mm-hmm. What did your supervisor say? Mm-hmm. How did that impact your ability to get the work done? Mm-hmm. And so you'll be able to quickly ascertain as you're digging in and asking really natural follow-up questions. Did this really happen or not? Mm. And oftentimes with that type of repeated follow-up, people will sometimes say, well, maybe that's not the best example. Mm. And so then as an interviewer, I would give them an opportunity and say, that's fine. Take a moment. I'm going to ask you the question again. Think about it. And it's okay if you need a minute to reflect, because you'll see people actually, you know, doing that kind of like mental dial back in their brain, mm-hmm. going back to a time and pulling a story out. And it will take them, you know, 20 to 30 seconds. During that time as an interviewer, you should just be silent and allow them to process.
And I guess watch them too, watch their body language. You know, everybody says 70% of all communication is nonverbal. And I what I do notice is I do make people uncomfortable. If I ask a question that I'm getting a questionable answer, a controversial answer to, and I'm really not sure I'm getting a whole answer, mm-hmm. then I'll do exactly what you said. I'll probe deeper and then I'll look for details and I'll say, okay, well, tell me about the things that were surrounding that. And make sure I'm getting the right picture. Then I'll even go back to it later in the interview, make sure I'm still getting the same story, because their stories can change. Finding the truth is so critical. So it's almost like we wish everybody would be 100% honest all the time, but on a job interview, it doesn't happen that way.
No, not always. Well, and I find actually people embellish much more on the resume. So when you start digging into the resume and asking them very resume specific questions, like you had a very interesting project here where you led a technology team of five and you built out a system. Tell me about that. Mm-hmm. And you can see they're struggling to even know what the heck is this lady asking me about? Mm-hmm. And then I'll say to them, well, it's right here on your resume. And they look at it every once in a while and I get, well, I didn't really write that. My mother helped me. My girlfriend helped me put this together. That's really not, maybe it shouldn't be there.
Yeah, game over. Game over. All right, you're listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Possessor. We have with us today Christina Polito from Compass Workforce Solutions, doing a great job giving us the other side of the interview puzzle. If you're having trouble interviewing, you want to pay attention and make the call to the person that you know that's having that problem, because Christine is giving you the other side of the coin. If you have an idea for Radio Jobline, you can write to me, scottp118@gmail.com. We have a news break coming up. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more with Christine.
And now, welcome back to Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on LI News Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. If you just joined us, we're talking to Christine Ippolito today, an HR expert specialist. She's the principal of Compass Workforce Solutions. Compass provides HR resources and expertise to small businesses in the New York metro area, New York and New Jersey. She's very educated, very talented, very, very up on this subject. And we talk so much on this program about how to go on a job interview, but we don't talk enough about how to conduct a job interview. And that's where Christine is really helping us today. Christine, let's talk about references for a minute. You were telling me something at the break that shocked me, you know, that there are totally fraudulent people out there.
Yes, there are. So, I mean, sometimes what we hear from clients or, you know, well, should we bother to check references? Isn't anyone that they're going to give us going to be a positive reference? And you'd actually be surprised. Mm-hmm. So in this particular instance, I contacted the three references that the candidate gave, and the voice on the other end was surprisingly similar to at all three companies, although different phone numbers and emails. Then the candidate also had their LinkedIn profile listed in their contact information. So I said, let me just check this out. I went to LinkedIn. The companies on LinkedIn did not match the companies on the resume. And it became very clear that there were also some companies that really didn't exist when you went to look them up on the internet or try to get contact information. So in that particular instance, we saved a client from hiring someone who had completely misrepresented their entire background.
Wow. I mean, I don't run across that often. So that story actually really strikes me, because I've been in the staffing business almost my whole career, and I can't ever remember someone being that fraudulent, that intentionally fraudulent.
We kind of have a saying in the office. You know, sometimes when you can't figure things out, I just put it under the "people are crazy" tagline. Mm-hmm. And nothing really ever surprises me anymore.
Yeah.
I just take it in, learn from it, and then go on to the next situation.
What we learned in staffing, I think you've done a little staffing too in your life, or maybe you've had some experience with it. What we learned in staffing is, if something can go wrong, it will. You know, that you have two entities going on here. You're not selling one, you're selling two, and they can both change their minds. They're not widgets, they're people. And I think staffing is just one of the most difficult businesses. I tell everybody, don't go into the staffing business. If my son was interested, I would have steered him away from it. And it's just a tough business. And things go wrong all the time. You even make a placement, Evan. The placement is made, and a week later you get a phone call. You're already spending the money, and you get a phone call. You know, my wife has good medical coverage, and she's got a pre-existing condition, and we're afraid that if I take a new job and put her on my insurance, that we're not going to get the coverage. So I go and I clarify that, and I go to the company, and I say, will she be covered? And the wife says, no, I don't want you to do it. That's it. $35,000 down the drain. So if it can go bad, it will. And it's just a very tricky business, but you got to get your references straight. You got to be honest. You've got to do the right, always do the right thing. Never be the one that's deceptive, because that's deceptive and job hunting don't go together. So, all right. So we're talking about conducting interviews. And now let's broaden it up a little bit, because I think people, even if they find they know how to deal with the culture and find the right cultural fit, they're still not going about the interview right. I mean, people don't prepare. When someone's coming in to see me, I look at their LinkedIn profile pretty carefully. So I'm looking at what do they look like? What does their profile look like? How much detail is on it? Is there a lot of content, a lot of good content there? Is it just kind of skimpy? Mm-hmm. Why is it skimpy? You know, that's a red flag. So I'm always looking for the truth. I feel like that's my job, is to find the truth. So what don't interviewers do, or what should they do that would make the whole process go better for both sides?
Well, interviewers have a tendency not to prepare. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you need a good, 15, 20 minutes in advance of the interview to kind of refresh yourself, right? Why am I bringing this person in? What was it about their skills and abilities that attracted me? And look at some of the specifics on the resume that you wanted to dive in, that you said, oh, that's an interesting project, or this person has a credential that would really be a great asset. And then having questions scripted out. Mm-hmm. So we generally recommend having a core set of questions. You don't have to go crazy, maybe 3 to 5. And then having one or two that are very specific to that person. Because you also want a good point of reference to compare people against each other, but in an even way. So if you're looking for some technical skill and some behavioral competencies, you can compare. And I think as we talked about before, there are no ideal candidates. So you've got to drill down on the critical factors and make sure that the critical factors are present. And if you're not preparing and you don't have questions scripted out for yourself, people have a tendency to wing it or lose control of the conversation. And the candidate goes off on a tangent and starts describing something in so much detail, or the story becomes too long, that the interviewer really needs to be able to kind of rein them back in and say, that's interesting. You've answered my question, out of respect for both of our time. Let's spend a little time on this next topic and, be polite. But people get nervous and sometimes they ramble.
Our intrepid intern, Evan, did a little research in preparation for today's show. And he found the 5 top reasons new hires fail. And if you could comment on these, go ahead, Evan.
Well, the top 5 reasons new hires fail is, number 1 is coachability. Number 2 is emotional intelligence. Mm. Number 3 is motivation. Number 4 is temperament. And number 5 is technical competence.
So you tell us how you'd find out if a person has all 5 of those things or doesn't have those things, like the right temperament.
So, temperament, I think you would ask them to describe a situation where they weren't getting along with someone else.
I have been asked that. I have been asked. Tell me about a time that you couldn't get along with somebody.
But I think another sort of very descriptive piece of temperament is someone's affect and their attitude. So is this a smiling person? Mm-hmm. Is it a happy person? Are they interested and engaged with you? Or do they seem very distracted, maybe aloof or kind of disengaged and really not fully present? Mm-hmm. Temperament is just sort of our day-to-day, how we show up.
Mm. I also wonder if a person has a temper. You don't need any of that. You don't need an incendiary person, in your midst. How do you prevent against something like that?
Well, I think you could clearly ask, have you ever gotten into a significant argument at work?
Mm-hmm.
What upsets you? Mm-hmm. Tell me about a time that you were very upset at work and why, what happened, how did you handle it?
Christine, let's back up a little bit. We'll back up the truck, put the rear brakes on, and we'll back up the truck. I'm interested in learning a little bit more about why people just take this for granted. In other words, your hiring manager and your HR manager, like you just said, you need 15, 20 minutes to prepare. I'm going to tell you 90% of people don't do that. I mean, I sit in these companies and I see them doing it, and they, Joe, send in the next one. Joe, send in the next one. There's no preparation. It's all by gut. Mm-hmm. They're doing it by gut, and your gut is not a good indicator of of what the reality really is.
Well, and I think the other situation is, you brought up before, hiring managers really should want to bring someone in who's going to elevate them in the organization. Mm-hmm. So hiring managers need to be aware of their own weaknesses and bring someone in that's going to help fill those gaps. So now you have a balanced team where I'm weak, you're strong, and we complement each other and we can work well together. Mm-hmm. So I think having a sense of self-awareness is important, and that people are prepared. But I also think the basic job description that most companies are using, and if you can kind of picture it in your mind, it has a 2 or 3 sentences description of the job, then all the tasks.
Right.
We talk about educational requirements. We talk about experience requirements. But we don't always talk about competencies or behaviors. We don't always get into the in-depth, we'll say experience in customer service. But then we really don't explore that.
Mm.
So I think sometimes that can be misleading. And I think HR needs to be the one to really bring this to the surface.
All right. I think, Evan, you brought up another point with coachability. Now, that's an easy one, because if you don't feel you can coach a person or that they're uncoachable, they kind of know everything already and they don't want to learn anything, that's a bad sign.
That's a very bad sign. Or they say, well, this is how we did it at my other job.
Mm.
Well, maybe it was right there in the right procedure there, but now you're in a new place with new people,
mm-hmm.
and you have to be willing to try new things.
Mm. So a person can kind of give it away a little bit if they seem even the slightest bit uncoachable.
Well, I mean, we're talking about why new hires fail.
Right.
So this is pretty much on the job.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that within the first week,
mm-hmm.
As they're being onboarded, as they're meeting coworkers, as they're being trained, that they're resistant. Well, but I've never done it that way. Or this is how we've always used the computer, used Word or printed things. So you'll kind of get a sense of it.
Do you, just out of curiosity, if a company does discover that in the first week, that they say, boy, this person's not coachable, do you cut your losses right there and sever ties with that candidate, or do you give them a chance to settle in?
I think it's a good idea to address the issue with the person and say, look, you seem very inflexible to mm-hmm. kind of adopting our policies and practices. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? Like, what's going on? And give them an opportunity, because again, some people just don't want to appear that they don't know what to do. So they tend to push back. Oh, I know that.
Mm.
We actually had an intern one time at Compass that told our office manager, I don't need to be trained on how to answer the phone. I've had a phone for years and I know how to answer it. So that was our first red flag.
Wow.
And of course, his first phone call that he took was, just not appropriate, not handled in the way that we all answer the phone at Compass.
Right.
So he didn't last the full internship, but right. we did give him a chance to say, well, we have policies and procedures here as to how we answer the phone that our customers and our clients are used to.
Yeah.
And you need to understand how that is.
I think you have to be very careful on an interview to not overstate your abilities. If you start, like, I can do that, I can do this, I can do that. Well, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure, because you're accepting the responsibility for too many pieces of the puzzle. So I think that's one of the big reasons that they do fail is people say, yeah, well, you need me to do these 5 things and I can really only do 3 of them. But let me tell you how I do the other 2. And that turns out to be a little fraudulent, in its description. And now you got somebody who's really not qualified.
That's very true. I mean, I really like to dig in on technical skills, even things that are basic like Word or Excel. So tell me how you've used Word. What types of programs have you done in Word, or are you creating templates? Are you doing mail merges?
Well, you could ask a person, can they use a pivot table? And then they'll say yes. And okay, how do you use a pivot table and what do you use it for?
And how do you make it? Walk me through the steps of
exactly.
how to make it.
But if you don't ask that, you know, then see, this is where we're finding the real truth, Christine. We're getting to that truth. We're probing for the truth. I just don't think you can accept the face value of what a candidate says. Now, what I always tell candidates, and let's just back up the truck again, is I tell candidates, you walk in there with way more knowledge than the company expects you to have. So now you know things that they didn't think that are surprising. The history, where the company started, where the guy grew up, where the CEO grew up, did he start it in his garage? There's certain things that you can learn that other people don't learn. And what I like to think is that having that knowledge kind of sets the table for you to have a successful interview. You create a positive thing at the beginning that demonstrates research, demonstrates enthusiasm because you did the research. And what I like to think is it creates a good communication model so that, you know, you've got a good back and forth, a trustworthy person who did all that extra research to prove that they're interested in the job.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if they're doing that, it does help the whole situation. It kind of ameliorates the whole situation. That's my theory.
I think so. I mean, it demonstrates tremendous interest. It demonstrates someone who's serious about their job search, is sincere, like you said, will do the research, is detail-oriented. And it would also show me as an HR person, they're just as important about organizational fit. It's important to them. Mm-hmm. They might not necessarily connect under that terminology, but they're very concerned too. Is this a company where I can be successful and I will fit in and I will be able to perform my best work?
Right. And we always talk about fit. The candidates talk about fit too. You know, a lot of times the companies say, well, what kind of money are you looking for? And sometimes they ask that question a little too early. And it kind of annoys the candidate because the candidate isn't ready to give that number because we don't even know if he's interested in the job or if he's qualified for the job. And you're already, talking about money. So I think that's the fault of the person who's the interviewer. Let the interview sink in first before you start. But if you, in the first 5 minutes, you ask them what they're looking for, that's a bad. Would you not call that a bad practice?
I think it makes people uncomfortable just because the money conversation, money is an emotional topic, and it does tend to make people a little bit more uncomfortable.
Let's talk about emotional intelligence, okay? Again, one of the top five reasons that new hires fail, emotional intelligence. What do they mean by that?
So emotional intelligence really has to do with me understanding me and having a sense of self, and also being able to read other people's reactions to me. Am I connecting with you? Do you understand me? Am I irritating you? So that emotional intelligence is what really allows us to navigate our universe and to connect with other people.
Okay.
And some people just don't have that skill set.
I think you can tell. Motivation is the next one. But I think you can tell when a person is motivated. And I think that is something we just discussed a couple of minutes ago when you walk in there with all that knowledge. Okay? Because if you weren't motivated, why would you do all that research to try to impress someone that you really do have the enthusiasm for the job?
Absolutely.
So there you go. All right. So before we run out of time, we have a couple of minutes left, but I want to take just a break here. I want people to be able to reach you, Christine. So if people like what they're hearing and would like to get some training and they're hearing things that their staff is not doing and they're also hearing things they've never heard before and they're saying to themselves, I wish I would have done that and I wouldn't have made all these mistakes. Tell us how we get a hold of you, website, email address, phone number, things like that.
Sure. So our office is in Hauppauge and our office number is 631-794-7400. Our website is COMPASS, W as in Walter, F as in Frank, S as in Sam.com. And we also have an email address, info@compasswfs.com.
Okay.
We offer a really interactive workshop approach to helping clients create these profiles on how they're going to interview for culture and job fit. And they can actually bring specific examples with them to the workshop and we work on those directly with them.
You know, there's one question I wanted to ask you that's a little unrelated, but it's still in the same hemisphere, is benefits.
Mm-hmm.
people are very curious about benefits. We all want benefits, and they're getting more and more expensive, and it's not getting any better. It's getting worse all the time. Do companies try to somehow save this money and go around it if they possibly can?
With benefits?
Yeah, not offering it or offering less.
I mean, generally what we see is companies really want to offer benefits, mm-hmm. but next to salaries, it's like the next highest expense, is particularly group health benefits. Mm. So we've been encouraging a lot of our clients to look at things that add a tremendous amount of value, like enhanced disability, long-term disability, company-paid life insurance, where that can become part of the total compensation package, but is taxed advantage to both the employee and the employer.
I want to do a quick shout out to a company on Long Island that's brilliant. They have pet insurance. Now, if you have a pet, and Evan, I know you put your dog down last week, and it's a horror. It's a nightmare. You've had it your whole life, and we're sorry. What was the dog's name?
She was India.
India. Great name. Great dog. What kind of dog was it?
She was a cute chihuahua.
Anyway, dogs can be very expensive. When my dog was sick the last couple of years, I must have spent $15,000 on medical care for the dog. This company, Spelman High Voltage, I'll give them credit, they came up with a pet insurance plan. And people love it. They adore it. They will relocate from other parts of the country because they have five dogs or five cats. It's crazy how people feel about their pets. But I'd love to see new benefits being presented and people like you to go in and say, look, you know, the job market's tight. You know, you got to offer this, you got to offer that. And I'm sure that you do that. And folks, if you're listening and your company is not quite sure what to offer on the benefits side, you got to get a hold of Christine. Christine, give us your website one more time.
C-O-M-P-A-S-S, W as in Walter, F as in Frank, S as in Sam.com.
Or just Google Compass Workforce Solutions.
Correct. And okay. We're right in Hop Hog.
Terrific. Okay. You've been listening to Radio Jobline. Christine Ippolito, thank you so much for doing a great job with us today. You're awesome. And we appreciate you being here. And Evan, of course, for doing the research and for sticking with us and putting the shows together for us. We'll be back next week with another show. If you have an idea for Radio Jobline, write to me, scottp118@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another show. Have a great week. Happy hunting.